Well, we're going to be starting our week two of our series on the fruit of the Spirit. We're going to be talking today about joy and peace. But I want to start off by reading Galatians 5, 22 and 23 as a group together. Now, second service last week really goofed this up. They could not get started and stay on the same rhythm and the same words, so it sounded like a big jumble. But you people are honestly just, you're way more talented than they are. You pay way more attention than they do, so I'm sure this is not going to be an issue. So let's go ahead and read Galatians 5, 22, 23 together. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Now, is that so hard? What is wrong with those people? Two little lines, and they just couldn't do it. So we had to do it twice because they kept messing it up so bad. So just as a quick reminder, some things we'll talk about a little bit every week as we go through this for a couple more weeks. The fruit of the Spirit comes from the Spirit, not ourselves. These are things that we don't manufacture or generate ourselves, just like any of you have gardens at home. You can cultivate your gardens, you can help the process, or you can kill the process, but you don't manufacture any of the fruit that comes on your trees, do you? You don't build it. You don't add any ingredients to it. The tree grows their own fruit. We can help it, or we can get in the way, but we can't manufacture anything that is growing. And secondly, we need to remember, against such things there are no law. That's always the right thing to do, to be loving and joyful and peaceful and gentle. That's always God's will. So if you're wanting to ever know, is this in God's will that I'm acting this way? Ask, am I being loving? Am I being patient? Am I being gentle? Am I being kind? Am I controlling myself? Those are always God's will. And I posted on Facebook a little bit yesterday, the spoiler alert, that the punchline to this sermon today is that you don't want to be a Christmas tree. That makes no sense yet, does it? Thinking about the fruit of the Spirit. So let's first of all talk about joy and peace today. So that word joy, the Greek word that Paul uses there is chara. It's kind of like the Greek word for grace and gift, charis. So I think they're probably cousins in the Greek language. But what it means is the joy is our source of gladness. So if our source of gladness is a fruit of the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is the presence of God in our lives, then God should be our ultimate source of joy, shouldn't he? We shouldn't look for other places to find joy. And so that also means if our source of joy is eternal, then our joy doesn't have to be affected by temporary things. We don't have to lose an eternal joy because we're in a temporary circumstance that we don't like. And ultimately, every circumstance we go through on this earth is temporary. Everything we go through in this flesh is temporary. It's going to end. But joy can be eternal. At one point, you know, we've talked before about King Solomon and his experiences, trying to find joy in his life, trying to create joy, trying to really seek what can be a source of gladness in my life. And he looked for it in many of the same temporary places that our society encourages us to look today. He looked towards knowledge to try to find a source of joy for his life. He thought, well, if I'm the smartest guy in the room, it'll make me feel good. If I know everything about everything, it will bring me joy. And that didn't work. And so he says, I'll test myself with pleasure. And Solomon began really a hedonistic lifestyle where every decision he made, he said, I didn't withhold anything from my eyes. If I saw something and I wanted it, I just did it. I took it. I partook of it. Whatever pleasure I wanted, I tried that to find a source of joy for my life. And that didn't work. He said at one point, he tried alcohol. He tested his body with wine and the fruit of the vine. And so he had gotten to a point in his life where he was drinking a lot. And guess what? Drinking a lot didn't make his life more joyful. That makes sense. He tried gathering possessions for himself. And he talks in Ecclesiastes about all these different things he bought and all this property he bought, and he had statues made of himself, and he bought everything he could see, thinking, well, if I own a whole bunch of stuff, that's going to bring joy to my life. And that didn't work. And so he said, well, I'll gather myself all the money I can get. He went out and he tried to get all the silver and gold and jewels he could get. And he became the richest person there was. And then he kept saying, this is all futile. This feels vain. It feels empty. I mean, if you've read the book of Ecclesiastes, did having everything that the world says we have to be happy make Solomon more joyful? He was already a king. He was the smartest guy in the room. He was rich. He had tons of stuff. He had more women and sex than he could ever have even enjoyed. He should have been, by the world standards, the most joyful person in the world, shouldn't he have? He had everything. But then he gives his own simple answer in Ecclesiastes 2:17. After he got everything the world says you have to have, he says, I hated life. And we can see people like that in our own lives, that they seem like they're very successful. They seem like they have everything that you could ever want. And then they wind up hating their lives. They're miserable. They achieve every goal that they want, every mountain they wanted to climb, they succeed. And then they wind up saying, I hate my life. I'm miserable. And some people even wind up taking their lives because they can't find, after everything they've gotten, they can't find a reason to even wake up in the morning because they don't have a source of joy. And so let's contrast Solomon with a story of Paul and Silas in Acts 16. And we can't read the whole story. It's too long. It's like 20 verses. But the story is Paul and Silas, they're preaching. They preached to a young slave girl who had sort of like some gifts to foretell the future, and they converted her. And so the people in the town were really mad that Paul and Silas were preaching the gospel. And so Paul and Silas, they get arrested for preaching in the book of Acts. And when they get arrested, they're stripped naked and flogged in a public square. And then they were thrown in a dungeon. Now, I wouldn't even want to go to an American jail, let alone a first century Middle Eastern dungeon. So after they're arrested and beaten, they're thrown into a dungeon and have their feet put into stocks where they were immobile. It's uncomfortable. They're already in a stinky dungeon. Then they can't even move and stretch around. I mean, this is not the day you ask for. This is not how you plan your day, especially if you're trying to serve the Lord. You think, well, God's going to bless me for doing this stuff, right? And then you wind up getting stripped and beaten and thrown in a dungeon. But what did they do? Did they quote Solomon, well, I just hate my life? I mean, because this would be a good day to hate your life when you've been arrested, beaten, and thrown in a dungeon. That's the day you say you hate your life, right? And then if you look at Acts 16:25, it says this. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. That was their response to the day they just had. Praying and singing hymns to God. Not grumbling and groaning and moaning. Not whining, not feeling sorry for themselves. After that day, they start praying and singing. That's pretty amazing. That says something about where their source of joy was. Now, as a worship leader, I love this verse because, you know, you guys would never do this. No one here would ever do this because it's really kind of sad. But over the years, I've had people come up and tell me all the reasons they couldn't worship during church. And they would tell me, that song was either too fast or that song was too slow. Or that song was too loud, or it was too soft, or the words were too jumbled, or they were too old-fashioned, or they were too new, or they were too old, or it had drums, or it didn't have drums. Or I couldn't worship because I don't like that girl on stage. So I couldn't worship today. And I say, you mean that in a lovely, warm building in a safe country like we have, you couldn't worship, but Paul and Silas could get stripped and beaten and thrown in a dungeon and they could worship? That describes the difference of where your source of joy is. What's your source of gladness? Getting my own way, making sure people sing songs I like, making sure the air conditioner is the temperature I want it to be. Well, I can't worship if somebody sits in my chair. I can't worship if the song leader didn't wear a tie. I can't worship if it's not on a piano or if it's not on a guitar. I can't worship if that song was written before 1975. That's too old. I can't worship if it was written after 2000. That stuff's too new. I mean, I've just heard everything about why I couldn't worship today. And I look at Paul and Silas. What a rotten day. And their response is to worship in a place that was not comfortable. They didn't get to pick their chair. They didn't get to pick their temperature. They didn't get to pick their anything that day. And their response to a very rotten day was to sing and praise God publicly in a place where it wasn't welcome. They just got arrested for proclaiming the gospel. And then they wind up singing the gospel. That says something about where their source of joy was. They didn't hate their life. They didn't grumble and moan and complain. They turned that rotten experience into a reason to sing and praise God. And the way we know where their source of joy was, because it didn't go away. Their joy was not based on their temporary circumstance, was it? If your joy is based on a temporary circumstance, then your joy comes and goes. If your joy and your source is in an eternal circumstance, your joy doesn't go away when your circumstances change. And so if you're wanting to cultivate the fruit of joy, we need to remember this verse here in Romans 8:28 says, "In all things we know that God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." When your source of joy is eternal, you start looking more long-term. If your joy is in temporary things, it only lasts until that temporary thing changes or decays or goes away or breaks. If you can't have joy, or if you're not looking for an eternal source of joy, you're going to have to keep replacing your source of joy over and over again, because everything in this world perishes. Everything in this world is corrupted by moth and rust. So if you look for joy in the things that decay and fall apart, the thing you find joy in today could be gone tomorrow, and then you're stuck without joy again. So the Bible's encouraging us to cultivate the fruit of the Spirit of joy, so you have an eternal source of joy, so your joy doesn't go away every time something bad happens to you, or every time you don't get your way, every time your preferences aren't enforced. It makes your joy go away if that's your source of joy. Getting my way is my source of joy. Having this amount of money is my source of joy. Having my seat at church is my source of joy. If you don't have an eternal source of joy, you can't maintain your joy. But God says he wants to work that fruit through us. He wants to grow it. These are God's will. There's no law against that, Paul writes. It's always God's will that we have joy in our life. It is not always God's will that we have the circumstances we want. So we need to cultivate the kind of joy that lasts through circumstances we don't like, that lasts through tough times in our lives. Next, Paul talks about peace. If I had another daughter, I would name her Irene. And it's because this Greek word, Irene, is the word for peace that Paul uses. And I always thought that was a great name. And then Brandy stopped having babies before I ran out of names I really liked. But that word, I've given her some doozies over the years, too. I mean, you know what? If you think the names I've got for my kids are weird, you ought to see the ones that didn't make the cut. I mean, these are the names she negotiated for me on. Ignatius was a negotiation. It didn't start there. So peace is a sense of harmony, security, and wholeness. And when it comes to peace, the Bible talks about sort of an internal peace that we have, but also external peace that's supposed to go on with believers. Having peace inside us is really a lot like having joy inside us. If you have a temporary source of peace, your peace is going to come and go with your circumstances. If you have an eternal source of peace, it's going to remain with you through the worst times. If you notice that every time you don't get your way, your peace is gone, you're not looking for peace in the right place. Your source of peace is not the right thing. Jesus said this. This is something that Jesus says he can plant into us if we'll accept it. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. Jesus is saying the peace I'm talking about is different than the peace of the world, because the peace that the world talks about is you can be peaceful as long as you get your way. That is the peace that the world gives. As long as everything goes how I want it to go, I can have peace in my life. If somebody does something I don't like, well, then I have to have turmoil in my life. If somebody says something I don't like, well, I can't have peace in my life. That's not the sort of peace that Jesus gives, is it? That's the peace that the world talks about. You can have peace as long as you get your way. As long as you get everything you want, you can have peace. Well, if that's the kind of peace you have, you don't have the kind of peace that Jesus is offering us. You don't have the kind of peace that grows from the Spirit working in you. You have the kind of peace that the world is talking about that is dependent on your circumstances and getting your way all the time. And then Jesus says in John 16, I've said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. Jesus is talking about the kind of peace that you have during trouble, during times that are painful, during times that you don't like, during seasons that cause you to struggle. That is the legitimate, godly peace that God is wanting to grow through us in the Spirit. That's the counterfeit is the world's peace that says, again, I can only have a good life if everybody does what I want them to do, says what I want them to say, and I get my way all the time. And if those things don't happen, then I'm going to have a tumultuous life. I'm going to be miserable. We're talking about a peace that can exist during our worst times. Our internal peace is rooted in God's sovereignty. We have peace inside because we know that He is in control of the universe and our lives and our deaths and all of our times, past, present, and future. God's sovereignty tells us that everything that happens to us is either because of God's commission, that He planned it and sent it to us, because of God's permission, that He allowed it to happen, but never because of God's omission, like He didn't have a clue what was going on in our lives. He either sends us things from His commission, He wills it for us, He allows it for us, but never because He doesn't know what's going on in our lives. And I think that's why Paul wrote about in Philippians, a peace that passes understanding, a peace that doesn't make sense, because it's normal to feel peace when everything is good, right? It's normal to feel peace when everything is going your way and you're experiencing a lot of success and ease. It's completely abnormal to feel peace when you're going through a trial. That's the sort of peace that people don't understand. That's the sort of peace that we can't understand sometimes. When we're going through tough times and we're still experiencing God's peace because we know, God, you're bringing me through this for a reason. This is not random. This is not a crazy circumstance. God, you're leading me even through a tough time because there's something you're trying to work for me. You're trying to work good into my life, even through painful situations. And so that God's relying on God's sovereignty is our source of internal peace when the world is bringing us trouble. Now, secondly, we need to think about external peace in the life of a believer. If the Spirit of God has put peace into us, well, then what should come out of us when we're squeezed? Peace ought to come out of us. We're like a sponge. If God has put peace into us, then peace ought to be coming out of us. So let's look at a few verses there concerning that. This is about peace towards other people. Proverbs 16:28 says, a perverse man stirs up conflict, and a gossip separates close friends. Gossip and slander are a great way to start trouble, be divisive, and ruin relationships. It either destroys the peace between friends, it can further the conflict in strained relationships. If you want to be a person of peace, you don't want to take part in gossip and slander on either side. You don't want to be gossiping and slandering about people. You also don't want to receive it. And we've said this a million times. It's so dangerous to get in a relationship with a gossipy person, because if they're going to gossip with you, don't you think they're willing to gossip about you? Right? If they're going to gossip to you about other people, they're going to gossip about you to other people. If they're going to slander other people to you, they're going to slander you to other people. But all that does is strain relationships more. It keeps people from being forgiven. It keeps people from moving on. It keeps people from feeling redeemed. So that's not a peaceful attitude to have. Now, I'm going to back up and say, I'm assuming you already know it's not okay to go around punching people and beating them up and killing them. So we're going to be talking about sort of interpersonal relationships. I'm kind of assuming that you're at that level in your faith already. So I'm not going to be bringing up, you know, the commandment that says thou shalt not kill. I'm assuming you're already on board with that. Okay, already. So 2 Timothy 2:23, don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because they produce quarrels. If you want to be a person of peace, you don't want to be involved in getting into arguments all the time. You don't have to start them, and you don't have to participate in them. You don't have to keep them going and keep them alive and throwing wood on the fire all the time. It is very difficult for a person to argue by themselves if we don't participate, right? We don't have to join in just because we're invited to an argument. We can turn off the faucet. We can withdraw ourselves from arguments. We can sometimes just agree to disagree or work things out peacefully. But a believer, someone who wants peace in their life, don't keep arguments going. Don't start them, and don't keep them going. Don't keep whipping them up with your words. Jesus says in Matthew 5:44, I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. This is great advice. I don't know if you've ever tried this, but it is pretty hard to keep holding a grudge against someone that you're actively praying for. And this is something I've done myself. I had a big issue with a person, a big issue. And it was important. Could have changed my life. And I actively started praying for this person, not just about him. God, put this person's head back on right. God, smite them in your anger. Teach them a lesson on my behalf. I was praying for the person. And when I started praying for this person I had a conflict with, I couldn't bring myself to have a conflict with them anymore. I was praying for the person who was really opposing me in my life. So that it was great advice. This is practical advice, not just a command. Jesus says do it for no reason. There was a purpose for this. Praying for a person makes it very hard to stay in a conflict with a person. Psalm 34:14, turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Now here's the question to ask. Are you a person who pursues peace? Are you a person who chases after peace? Or do you look for reasons to be mad and offended? Because those are the exact opposite attitudes. There are people who like being mad and offended in the world. You probably just thought of three or four names, right? I know this person. They're just waiting to be mad at me. They're just waiting to argue with me. They're waiting to be offended. But we are supposed to pursue peace. We shouldn't want to be in the middle of arguments and drama and turmoil all the time. Jesus teaches his followers that we need to be looking for peaceful resolutions to problems. There's always going to be problems in relationships. There's always going to be turmoil. But are you pursuing peace in those things, or are you pursuing quarrels? Are you pursuing arguing? Are you pursuing gossip? Are you pursuing shutting people out of your lives instead of restoring them? Paul said we have the ministry of reconciliation. We have the ministry, the job. The word ministry means the job or service of putting relationships back together. If we're not pursuing peace between people, then we are working against the will of God. That's how you cut off the fruit in your life. You cut off that fruit of peace is by pursuing arguments, by pursuing being mad, by pursuing being insulted and offended. If you want to follow Jesus, peace is the only path he walks. When we sing Christmas songs, are we singing about the Prince of Quarreling, the Prince of Arguing, the Prince of Being Offended, or the Prince of Peace? Jesus is the Prince of Peace. He requires that of his followers. We shouldn't walk around looking sour and angry and being mad and stirring up problems all the time. Peace ought to be one of the fruits that we enjoy the Spirit growing in us. We ought to want that. We ought to want a peaceful life. We ought to want peace with the people around us. And we can cultivate that. The Spirit will grow that in us if we get out of the way, if we get our preferences out of the way, if we get our egos out of the way. The Spirit wants to grow peace into our lives. That is always his will, Paul writes. So as we're going to conclude the message today, I want to switch the metaphor a little bit from talking about joy and peace being fruits to joy and peace being roots in our lives. If we are going to have lives that are not shaken and destroyed when trouble comes, then joy and peace have to be part of our root system. Just like a tree, if a tree has a strong root system under the ground, that tree can withstand almost anything without being destroyed. You can break off its limbs, and you can pull off its leaves, and you can carve your name into it. You can wreck your car into it. Your kids can shoot arrows into it. That's what happens in my house. You can subject it to hail and high winds. During the winter, you know, those trees that look great during the spring and summer, they look lush during the winter. You know, all the foliage rots and dies, and the thing looks, you know, like it belongs in a haunted forest. But as long as its roots are doing well, it's just waiting for an opportunity to regrow everything, isn't it? During the winter, it can lose everything about it that makes it look alive. And it can look very dead, but if the roots are going to keep nourishing it, it's still going to get bigger and healthier next year. Because a tree that has good, healthy roots, even at its very ugliest, is still alive and just waiting to bloom again. And if our lives have joy and peace holding us steady underneath, then we won't be destroyed during our ugliest seasons. The seasons where we look at our worst, the seasons where we've been battered the most, we can bloom again if we have a root system comprised of joy and peace. Here's what I want to talk about, the Christmas tree. Contrast a healthy tree outside facing all these tough things with a healthy root system versus a Christmas tree. Now, the Christmas tree is covered with all kinds of beautiful decorations and shiny ornaments and tinsel and packages all around it. People sing about it. Guests walk into your house and praise how beautiful your Christmas tree is. They get a lot of attention for the things on the surface, don't they? And for a brief period every year, the Christmas tree is sort of like a celebrity in your house. But that Christmas tree has no roots. And so it doesn't have any stability. It doesn't have any strength. And ultimately, that Christmas tree doesn't have any life unto itself. Because what would happen to your Christmas tree if you decided you didn't want to water it anymore? Well, it can't get its own nutrients anymore. It doesn't have any roots. If you decide not to water it, the thing's going to wither and die. What would happen to your Christmas tree if you didn't put it in a stand and secure it? I mean, what would happen to your Christmas tree if you just tried to balance it in the middle of your room? How stable would that thing be? What would it take to knock over that Christmas tree, make it collapse and be destroyed? Just a little touch would ruin it. A breeze would blow it over and ruin it because it doesn't have any roots. You see, people who don't have the roots of joy and peace in their life, they fall over and collapse and get ruined by touches and breezes and things that shouldn't be able to knock them over. A Christmas tree is all surface. It has no roots. It has no stability. And once the tinsel is off, what do you do with it? You just throw it out and it's useless. It's never thought of again. And so a person who lives like a Christmas tree may look really great on the outside, but it's completely devoid of joy and peace. Isn't that ironic? The Christmas tree has no joy and peace. We need to have joy and peace below the surface. ready to strengthen us and stabilize us and nourish us and repair us when we get hit with storms. Because it doesn't matter how we try to portray our lives as being beautiful on the outside, if we don't have roots, we collapse under the smallest pressure or discomfort. And people shouldn't see that. We ought to bear a better witness in the world that every time something doesn't go my way, I collapse, or I get angry, or I blow up, or I argue, or I become divisive. I ought to have better roots comprised of joy and peace that hold me together. And so we're going to go ahead, and the last thing I want to do is read a verse together. We're going to sing our final song. And I want to read Romans 14:16 that really describes what's going on, what life in the kingdom should be like for the follower of Jesus. If you've called on the name of the Lord and you've been born again by the Spirit, if the Spirit is growing these fruits in your life, joy and peace ought to be a normal part of your existence. If you're a citizen of heaven, joy and peace ought to be something you live with and experience. And if you're not experiencing them under those circumstances, then you have to ask yourself, what am I doing to cut off the work of the Spirit in my life? What am I doing to stifle the growth of these fruits that God says he wants for me? So let's read Romans 14:16 together too. The kingdom of God is not a matter of eating and drinking, but of righteousness and peace and joy in the Lord. Let's sing.